The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we continue our draft countdown shows. One of my favorite times of the year. And today, we're going to talk about wide receivers. I know that's on everybody's mind. Ravens fans, definitely one of the positions of need. And here to do that with me is James Ogden. James, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
James, first of all, you can probably tell from the accent, lives in the UK. Finally got to meet him in person at the Ravens game this last year. And we got to spend a couple of hours with various people that you don't see every day, but that you talk to a lot on Twitter at some of the various parties that you guys had. Really appreciate you guys did a wonderful job with those parties out there.
Yeah, we obviously loved it. It was a big deal for us getting the Ravens over to the UK again, and we really took advantage of it this time with the big birthday party on the Saturday where we saw each other, and then the tailgate the next day, which I think a lot of people that came over from Baltimore actually went to the tailgate the next day and thought it was pretty close to as close as you could get to an authentic Baltimore tailgate. So that was really, really lovely to hear, and obviously great to get the win as well. But it was really great to meet you the first time, and some others that came over that we sort of talked to on Twitter quite a lot. And it was really nice, really great weekend.
Yeah, lots of fun, lots of photo ops. I spent time with Gordon McGinnis, which was a lot of fun. He was explaining rugby to me. And, I know you had a lot of duties in terms of running that party, which were pretty significant. So I really appreciate you guys making the time on that. But let's talk wide receiver for the Ravens, because that's what people are here to hear. And let's start by talking about the Ravens situation a little bit. They lost a productive per target receiver in OBJ, obviously a guy who probably didn't play as much as fans would have hoped. They certainly didn't meet the yardage expectations that they had set or bet on. But OBJ is gone, and I think at the price that he might have cost, it was a sensible move on. We're kind of at a crossroads for Bateman, that I still don't have a really good sense of whether or not the Ravens will pick up the fifth-year option. I really thought no before. Where are you on that?
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because it is significant. So I am probably leaning towards no, that they won't pick up that option just because of the cost and where they've got to spend money elsewhere. It's a tough one though, because I do kind of believe in Bateman, and I do think there's still a chance here of at least a moderate type of breakout in this season, and the Ravens will get backed into a corner really if he does do that. But it is such a tough decision, that one. It really is.
Yeah, you always want to have 1 year left on the contract when you're negotiating the deal, and in particular with a wide receiver or a high dollar value position. We saw what happened with Lamar in terms of, you know, attempt to use a franchise tag. You wouldn't have that luxury with a Bateman, because there's no way you'd want to pay franchise tag money for it's let's say it's unlikely. If Bateman were to suddenly break out and be a completely different player, maybe. But as of right now, I don't think they would do that. And that's part of the reason why they're having so much difficulty deciding there. I'm very much of the opinion the OA is a no-brainer, that they will pick that one up.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's probably also hurting Bateman's chances of getting that fifth-year option picked up.
Great point. Aguilar re-signed after a solid season. I was very much opposed to that move, as I think a lot of people know. The sixth-round draft pick seemed to be a lot of cost in addition to dollars and you know what you were actually getting. But Aguilar really had a very fine year, and I was happy not only what he did. I think OBJ is given a lot of leadership credit. I think what Aguilar did on the field in particular, clearing the game tying touchdown against the Rams for Zay, is just one of the great stories of the year in terms of an individual effort on a play and it paying off.
It really was. I think he did all the dirty work really well. You know, the gritty stuff that you really need. And I was really happy they picked that back up. It was a nice pickup. Obviously, a derided pickup when it happened, because he was sort of the first through the gate on last year's off season. But it's a really nice move, and it really solidifies the wide receiver core. It means you don't have to spend necessarily a later round draft pick on a guy like that. You can reserve those draft picks for other positions.
Yeah, and they gave one away too, so it's probably a good thing that they did that. But anyway, Duvernay gone to the Jags. He was not part of the offense last year, and yet I still feel like the Ravens, particularly with the loss of Keaton Mitchell, the likelihood he's not there at the start of next season, and my desire not to use Zay in a gadget role, could really benefit from another speed player that could run a lot of gadget plays. And Duvernay would have been just fine to do that if there were a reasonable price, but there's not a reasonable price for Duvernay within the context of Jackson's second contract. So there are a lot of guys in this wide receiver group who could fill that role. Part of my issue with it is I'm not all that keen on the Ravens picking up another slot receiver, but I do want a gadget player. And so Zay has kind of a limited, somewhat limited by his size in terms of what he can do, but you want him. I want him anyway to be running routes down the field and getting the attention of a safety there, as opposed to playing a gadget role that he really started last season as.
Yeah, I would agree. There are definitely some options in this class. I would agree with you about Zay. I absolutely want him. Sort of potentially taking on that wide receiver one position for the Ravens. So I don't want him running tons of those. I do think there are a few guys in this class, probably not some of the guys I think I would talk about aren't going to be in my top 10. They would be outside my top 10, but there's a couple. This is one specifically that I think would be great for that role. Maybe we can get into that later. You're on mute, Ken, I think. Oh, Ken, you're on mute, I think.
I am sorry about that, but I could guess probably who that is, but we'll let that ride out here. With the tight end group that the Ravens have, they really are also fulfilling a fair amount of their big slot need. So that's a place also where I'm not excited for the Ravens to spend draft capital as in trying to find that guy. Because right now I think the Ravens could have, well, they have three tight ends certainly, but they have two tight ends who could fit into that big slot role almost interchangeably. So you don't need a Kelvin Benjamin type guy to move into that role and be another receiver there. You have options already. So I don't want a small slot for slot exclusively. I want a small slot for gadget, and I don't want a big slot at all. Already the Ravens, you know, needs are kind of trimmed down in terms of what you have there. And now I always want a big Z because you don't always have them, but they really need another X. They really need another X backup is how I'm looking at it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's a guy that we'll definitely talk about that's very high on. Well, I'm higher on him than most that I think I'm a big fan of. I think he's a very good player. I think he's gonna be a very good player in the league. I'm going to talk very highly of him, but I'm going to talk very highly of him with a big no X against him for the Ravens, because I don't think he fits the Ravens offense. And I also think he's best as a big slot. So I don't think that would be a great pick for the Ravens, but we'll touch on that. I would agree that we need the Ravens need another X. I think, you know, one of the ways I sort of describe it, especially with the way this offense runs, I think is you're always wanting someone to do a bit more than this, because he is a little bit, sort of restricted in what he does, but I almost see the DK Metcalf Lockett, Tyler Lockett sort of relationship, that the kind of routes that they run in Seattle. You know, you've got your Lockett and Zay Flowers, and you potentially could have a DK Metcalf type as the X, where he could be a little more limited in terms of the routes that he excels right. on. He could be deep routes and sort of hitches, those smaller kind of pivot routes, those types of things might be something that you look for in a receiver that you're kind of targeting in this draft.
I'm sure we're going to talk about the combination of routes that receivers run a lot during this episode, because there's certain combinations that work. There's other combinations that really aren't particularly good at the college level that you look at and you say, well, that's a problem. And one of the really nice things is the PFF draft guide this year is much improved, and it includes not a complete set of divided targets by route. You can total it up. It just doesn't equal their total number of targets or total number of catches, but it has most of their catches are defined into groups. I think the reason for exclusions is maybe extended plays and jet pitches and things like that they really couldn't put into one of those 9 or 10 categories that they have. But anyway, it's a very good for looking at receivers in terms of combinations of routes, in terms of what their entire route tree could be, where they can run on the route tree. And that also gives you a good idea of who can provide wiggle value at the top of the route. And then you really got to confirm that and look on the tape and see, you know, is that wiggle really there? And a lot of receivers, they fall into, to my mind, three categories: guys that don't really have anything, the guys that are so sudden that it doesn't matter that they can't wiggle. And that's like Zay Flowers is that. He's very sudden, but he's playing his own cards in terms of when he's at the top of the range. He's not trying to get the opponent to make a mistake that he can then exploit. And then you got the guys who are puppeteers of the cornerback that's opposite them and wait for them to make a mistake, put their foot in the ground and go, and they create separation that way. And those guys, you can often see from their combination of routes they're running, or get clues to who they are that you can then go to the tape and confirm on. But that's kind of a little bit of my process in terms of doing this. Want to talk about yours?
Yeah, very similar. I mean, I'm a graduate of the Scouting Academy. I've been doing this for sort of over 10 years now, really. So my wide receiver is a position I'm always particularly interested in from an evaluation standpoint. I'm not talking about an obsessed Ravens fan, because although I kind of obviously am, but the old Ravens fan obsession with the wide receiver position. But I think my process now is quite defined in the way that I look at receivers. I'm looking specifically at their release, first of all, and then looking at their ability to separate. I don't like talking about route running specifically, because we don't know how they are being asked to run a route. But what we can do is the same thing you've described, which is sort of judge how they are separating and what they're doing. And mm-hmm. It's a very similar definition to you, but I think I'm taught to look at, do they separate with processing? So that's the kind of the thing you mentioned before about checking when a DB is going to make a mistake, and also trying to manipulate a defensive back. Do they separate with their technique? Do they separate with their athletic ability? And can they separate with their play strength? Are the things that I'm looking for in terms of separation. And then obviously I'm looking at hands, all different situations in terms of their hands. What is their attack of targets like? I'm looking at their body control as well, and their adjust to the football, not just in the air, but also on the sideline, to make sure they're getting 2 feet down in bounds. And then finally, I'm looking at yards after the catch. So that's kind of where I'm looking at with these receivers. And I've also got much more scientific with my grading this year, and try to grade each of these specific traits individually as I'm watching on film. On performance and potential, because I've missed on receivers in the past, where I've tried to sort of over project a guy and say this guy can do this and this, so he's going to be this, and I've sometimes sort of gone a bit too far. So I've kind of tried to control myself this year in terms of the potential that I'm spotting.
I want to follow up on that, because it's easier to talk about mistakes you've made in the past up front. But the big one, and I started doing this at cornerback last year, but I really want to take more time and do it at wide receiver and all the other positions where I can figure out how to do it, is to make sure metrics are confirming what you think you're seeing on the field. It's very easy to fool yourself with the limited number of snaps you can see As an offensive line guy, I really do not tolerate that. I can't stand traits-based scouting, which overlooks, you know, actual performance on the field because it doesn't really look very well at this. We're all forced to be a little bit more trait-based for multiple reasons when we're looking at college players and projecting the pros. First of all, they don't have an NFL opponent opposite them. And second of all, you have a limited amount of total stuff you can look at. So the best positions like offensive line, edge rusher, things like that, you can look at complete cut-ups of games and get an unbiased look at what they're doing versus an opponent that you select and try and get something that kind of makes sense. But when we're looking at wide receivers, if you really overlook the metrics, and I'm not saying you shouldn't consider context, but when you really overlook the metrics, I think you run the risk of evaluator arrogance, where you'll depend so much on your own vision on traits that you will ignore metrics that totally belie that. The player who I just couldn't understand the draft pick, and I really was opposed to last year, is Caillou Kelly. You know, he had a terrible year at Stanford in his last year, and you know, all the metrics basically said that, and all the metrics, by the way, we're confirming that players like Witherspoon and Emmanuel Forbes were at the top of that cornerback draft, and that made sense. The other guy was not at the top of the draft for me was Gonzalez, because I didn't think he was as good from that. So far, so good on where we are with that. But my point is that I really think it's important to avoid evaluator arrogance in terms of looking at traits without corroboration from some numbers. So we'll have as much of a metric framework as we can for you in addition to our review of film. I'm already looking at this and saying this is going to go a long time, because we've got one of the really great evaluators that I trust on the show, and James. But anyway, James, why don't we just kick it off here and go right into your number 10 wide receiver, where we've typically done the honorable mentions is in the second half of the show. We have a little more time, and to not give away kind of the bottom end of the top 10 ranking.
Yeah, that sounds great. I think so. The first one at number 10, and what I would say first of all is that my 10 through 7 all have an identical performance grade. So the split between the 10 through 7 is actually the potential that I see in these guys and what their potential ceiling could be. So you might disagree with my number 7 guy being on the same plane as some of the others, but I do think he is. I think I've seen enough of the technical elements to be able to say I think he's there, but he's at a much higher plane in terms of potential. This guy right at the bottom is certainly not a guy who's sort of not, like, I don't think he particularly has a huge ceiling, but I think what he does currently is great. And so that's Ladd McConkey for me, who's at number 10. McConkey for me is he's an interesting evaluation because of the offense that he's played in, and because he's sort of there are a number of roles you could potentially project him to at the next level. I think, you know, his footwork and change of direction in his release when he's facing soft press and when he's not getting jammed is really excellent. You know, he has a really nice package that he's able to, a nice package of tactics to kind of close the space and release against press. So I like that. When he's facing a jam, you know, when he's getting jammed at the line, he will win against lesser competition. Like, this isn't a guy who is a smaller guy who's just going to get bullied around at the release point. I do see him release pretty well through those. But if he does come up against someone with better play strength, you can see cornerbacks sort of stay sticky on him in the beginning portion of the route. I think he's a really good guy who separates with processing for me. Like, he, you know, it's very difficult to read what he's doing as he's coming up to his different breaks. He's technically really impressive on a lot of different routes. And I think he's got a kind of, he's got a combination of how he separates that's kind of this solid athleticism that he has that is really solid, but then really outstanding technique and salesmanship in his routes that yep. just really helps him to separate. Everything he does is crisp and sudden, and I wouldn't necessarily say he plays with elite explosion, but I think what he does is really professional. Gets in and out of his breaks quickly. You know, he's sinking his weight and snapping off acceleration on deep comebacks really well. And that consistent stem is really important. he has really good hands on all types of throw. You know, he's just a professional receiver who's going to, he's not got a huge catch radius, but he's going to attack targets appropriately, and he's going to win. I think he has really good adjustables thrown over the sideline, and ball, like any, all the different types of balls that he can get thrown to him. I think he's probably a number two at the next level. He's not an X. He could play Z or slot, I think. I think he could be flanker or slot. I think he's actually a decent fit for the Ravens if they were looking for that type of receiver. I'm not sure that they are. I think they're probably looking for, as we've talked about, a sort of bigger X, potentially a kind of gadget type guy. But there comes a point where he becomes too good a value to pass up, I think. Yep. And I think before I let you come in, I think the other thing I'd say is just when we're talking here, me talking about some of the things he doesn't do as well, like all of these receivers I like. This is a very deep class, and I'm not, you know, we're sort of, when I'm talking about things that they could be better at, things that they could do, I think, you know, all of these guys are really, really good, and you're having to get probably three or four receivers further down the list before you're starting to talk about guys that I'm maybe less high on. So I really do like McConkey. I think he's a good player, and yeah.
Okay, so I'll respond on McConkey because he's a specific player. 6'0", 186, 439, 40. So we have some parameters for those. Very small arms and hands. You mentioned the catch radius being an issue. I think it is. I think what I like about him is very high speed adjustments to route. Like, he doesn't have to stop, plant, go. He actually, you know, moves in a serpentine manner in a way that at high speed that I really like. His key metrics are outstanding. 13.1 yards per target, 3.26 yards per route run, 6.3 yak per reception is okay. Actually, that could be better. And 136.8 passer rating throwing to him. Nothing wrong with that. There's a few players in this draft which are higher than that, but that's pretty spectacular. To get up there, you really need to be someone who doesn't put your quarterback in a position to throw interceptions, and also who breaks and plays and scores, because touchdowns and interceptions are half of your total passer rating. So you can't really get away with that. There's one guy, by the way, who has some of the most incredible metrics I've ever seen in that category. We'll get to later. His hands are good. They're not great, is where I would put it. He's got a 7.8% drop rate career. One of the things I find very difficult to do with college receivers, nobody's putting together clips of their drops. You can see every touchdown, you get that put together, and you can see what do they do differently on these routes, where they scored, and I think that's very valuable for cornerbacks to see what traits do they have in terms of a way to get to the football and make an interception. But you don't get all their drops put together, so I don't really know if they're focus drops primarily, if they are look ahead drops, if they're you know, drops because of just poor hands and poor connection to the football, which, you know, the double catchers that you see at the combine can sometimes show you. Here's my main issue with McConkey is this, and I haven't ranked higher than you do, but can we project less upside from the combination of his age? He'll be 23 in November, and a lot of the receivers in this class are younger. And the fact that he is so polished already, in my opinion, as a receiver with what he does. So he certainly is a great package right now. I think he can help a team in year one. Lots of value, I think, as a misdirection or gadget player, if that's how you want to use him. Not sure if it maximizes his ability, but you could do that. But how would you address that question?
Yeah, I think so. I think the best way to address it is the thing I was talking about earlier is I'm trying to be more scientific about the potential. So I mentioned before that my first four guys that we're going to talk about are very similar in terms of their performance grade. The top guy at seven, so my grading scale is 1 to 6. The top guy at seven has a half point difference between his performance and his potential. Ladd McConkey has less than 0.1 difference between his performance and his potential. So I do think this is who he is. I think you've got a really good view of who he is, you know, in college, and who he'll be in the NFL if he's successful. I don't necessarily think there's a whole lot of ceiling there. As you mentioned, the way he gets open it isn't a a high athleticism type way he gets open. He gets open with his processing, with his technique. And I think both of those things are pretty high in terms of the way I rate those things. So I'm not sure there's a great deal of headroom for him to improve. I think the thing I just wanted to quickly come back on your point about hands, which I think is absolutely right. And it's a big frustration of mine that there are, that less is talked about in terms, I know this isn't a tight end podcast, but Brock Bowers is very much the number one tight end prospect in the class. And I also think that, and I think he's a potential generational player. He's going to be a matchup weapon against all types of different defensive backs at the next level. But I never see any, all I see is he's got solid hands. He's got good hands. And he does have good hands, but he also does not attack targets correctly that are thrown above his head. Mm-hmm. He brings his hands together far too late. And sometimes it's fine, but other times it's not, because that will cause an inconsistency in terms of you catching the football. And so the hands thing is a frustration of mine, because it's an easy thing to be able to see on tape if you understand the technique of catching the football and understand what that is. And so you'll know if it's a concentration drop, if it's a look ahead drop, or if it's just not attacking the target correctly. Last year's class was full of receivers like that who don't attack targets as correctly as they should. Zay Flowers has a small deficiency actually in the mm-hmm. way he attacks targets that caused some of his drops last year.
Pittsburgh,
yeah. So it is a thing you can see on tape, and it's frustrating that it's not called out as much in scouting reports as I see.
Well, I mean, part of the problem is just that video record of that is not assembled in that way. There's nobody's incented to really do that. If there was some guy who was the guru of drops, I would absolutely love it. Put together every drop you can find from all these things. It'd be a hard thing to do, but if somebody who could do it, their work would be incredibly valuable if they would do it. So anyway. Do I have anything else to say about McConkie before we move on here? Could be a return man in the NFL. He could have value to the Ravens there. The Ravens, you know, I think the new kickoff rule is going to put some pressure on this wide receiver group, and some of the guys who might be a tougher draft, even in a later round, are going to get an opportunity because they have some return value here. Whereas, you know, an Aussie in an old year might just use a cornerback for that kind of thing. I don't think we can afford to be as cavalier with it in this draft. I think they need to get somebody pretty good. And I'm not sure that I would want Wallace to be the only guy on the team who I was trusting to return both kicks and punts.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right. Great. Well, let's move on. I'll go to my number 10 guy, who's maybe a mild surprise, but it's Xavier Leggett of South Carolina. Let me get down my notes here, because he is a converted running back. 6'1", 221, 23 in January, 439, 40. He doesn't probably fill into the typical X role, but of course, AJ Brown, and I always confuse myself with his name in particular, the guy who made his way with the Titans and moved on to the Eagles, probably the best in this group or this of this prototype, we'll call it, of this type that does extremely well after the catch. Leggett is the guy this year after the catch who is just remarkable. And I don't mean guys who get away with it on some other level. He's at 6.4 yak per play, which doesn't seem outrageous, but his missed tackles forced. I'm sorry, I have the wrong guy. He has 9 missed tackles forced and 2 drops. I am confusing him with another player, but Leggett is a guy after the catch that is good because of his running back build. 126.3 passer rating to him, 3.15 yards per route run and 12.9 yards per target. Now, just put for context, Ravens have never had anybody over 11.04 yards per target, and they've only had about 5 individual seasons in team history of 10 yards per target. So these college numbers, they do tend to be really inflated for some of the receivers who do a lot of this. In Leggett's case, his go-to routes are crossing and hitch. They're both inside releases. It's not a great combination. You know, you'd rather have hitch and go, hitch and corner, hitch and post. The vertical routes combined with the hitch are the guys who really have the gaudy numbers in this draft. But Leggett's done a lot. He's been dangerous on those crossing routes. He's really not a wiggle guy. I do think that's something he could be a project and get better at, but he hasn't been a wide receiver all his life is part of the thing. Now you would think, wouldn't you, that running back would have some ability to wiggle and at least read the leverage of the opponent?
Yeah, you would, but perhaps that's why he's not a running back anymore.
Tracks the ball well in the air. I think that one of the things we saw is that Spencer Rattler liked to throw him the ball up and just let him track to it in the middle of the field. That's a good endorsement from a quarterback who is much maligned, but is honestly, for my money, the only middle class quarterback of this entire draft. And you know, maybe he's a guy that the Ravens would even go after at some point. But he's the only guy in round like 3, 4, 5 that I really think could potentially be a value. What else was there about him? He's lined up on the slot. He's lined up outside. Doesn't really need to have that versatility for the Ravens. He's probably big enough to be an X at 6'1", 221. He'd be a backup for Bateman there. He'd play some at Z. Good chance he's available at the end of round two, I'd say, possibly early round three. The end of round two, of course, the Ravens have a pick. Early round three, they could acquire one if they move back. So either one is a possibility, but it could really be, he's one of the players that could be at the intersection of need and value being at available at that spot. Now, we don't know exactly how the draft is going to play out, but there are a lot of receivers, and Leggett is a guy who might really be available at the end of that second round.
Yeah. So he's my number 7 guy.
Great.
And so we can, I'll talk a little bit about him. He's, so for me, if you remember, I mentioned 4 guys all graded exactly the same in terms of performance. He's the highest potential guy out of the 4 guys. And it comes down to that high weight speed that he does have that I think. And I also think the headroom is there because of what you mentioned with his, I think you're right. He doesn't have a ton of wiggle. It is his hip mobility, which is a little bit limited. But I also think that his technique on some of the routes where you're asking him to run, so the types of breaks you're looking at are basically are two-step breaks where you're coming inside 90 degrees, or it's a speed cut where you're not trying to not lose speed but get to the sideline. What's happening there is he's just not making the transition quick enough, and he's allowing the defensive back into the route. But I also do very much like him from a linear perspective. Like he is good. So the go route thing is interesting to me in terms of the numbers. I saw him getting separation on go routes. I think it might be a little bit more a feature of Spencer Rattler's play that he, and I like Rattler too, but that he isn't necessarily getting a lot of catches on those rounds. Yeah. I completely agree. The biggest thing you see on tape is the way he's able to sink his weight, sink his hips, get turned on those 180 degree routes and on hitches, on deeper comebacks as well. It's quite impressive. If he could learn to work off that combination of those two routes, he could start to win in other areas of the field. So it's why I think he does have a good sort of chunk of potential with him. He's an older guy and an older breakout, but as you mentioned, he was a running back. He also had some real tragedy in his past at the end of high school. He also had a motorcycle accident that basically lost him a year in college. So there's a lot of factors that sort of go into his evaluation. I think this is a really good one to talk about. The couple of things that he does need to work on. He absolutely needs to work on his release package. Mm-hmm. A guy that is that big and strong, who absolutely runs over defenders in the open field and makes them look silly with the angles they try and take to him sometimes. It's frustrating with him at the release point where he just doesn't have the technique to be able to take advantage of that size and strength. And then I also think there is while he has good hands, there is a, let's talk about the thing we were talking about just earlier, balls that are thrown sort of low and outside his frame when he's running perpendicular to the line of scrimmage. When you see them, he isn't attacking those targets correctly, but that's a very small thing to be concerned about. Low and outside running perpendicular to the line of scrimmage. You're not going to see too much of that, I don't think, and certainly not expect too much on that. So I think he does sort of go up and catch 50-50 balls. He's a contested target guy. I really like Leggett for the Ravens. I think it is a nice fit for what they're looking for. I don't think he's a plug and play X, which is kind of nice because it means that you can give Bateman some of that time and space to develop with Zay on the field as well, and then bring in Leggett next season if he is able to develop into that type of guy. However, you might say that's a bit of a wasted investment in a second, third round pick, a guy that isn't necessarily going to give you that much on the field in his first year. But I actually do think He could give you some stuff on the field in the first year. So it'll be, I think it's a nice potential. If you are thinking about picking a receiver in the second, early third, I think he is going to be a good option, as you mentioned, with the intersection of value and need.
Yeah. So, you know, the Ravens are in a position where they're probably going to do what you just said, you know, pick a player for 2025 at offensive tackle. And, you know, whoever they get, the record recently of offensive tackles being ready to play, or any offensive line being ready to play in year one, has been terrible. And the Ravens have a record of multi-year development of offensive linemen. So they're already going to go through this at some other positions. I'm prepared for it to happen at wide receiver as well, along the same lines. And, you know, I'm not ready to give up on the 2024 season because it's one of Lamar's 5 years with us and all that. But I think this Ravens team is not going to be as good as it was last year. And that's pretty clear from all the free agency departures. Even if they really did kill the draft, not if they 2018 kill it, but if they kill it like they have in some other years, I still don't think they're going to be as good as last year's team. And they don't need to be. I mean, the 2012 team was the worst of the first five Harbaugh years, and they were the one that won the Super Bowl. You know, you just throw your hands up in some of that stuff. This is going to be a get into the tournament kind of year, maybe as a wild card, maybe as a division winner. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and the positions that are going to have to develop, are going to have to potentially develop over the course of time, is going to be offensive line, as you mentioned, wide receiver, and edge rusher. Those are the three that are probably that they may bring in project type guys, where they're going to have to mm-hmm. develop them. And amidst all of the coaching departures that the Ravens had, they still kept Greg Lewis, who's the wide receiver coach. Obviously they lost Keith Williams, but Greg Lewis is a renowned receiver coach and came from Kansas City last year, so they kept him. They still have Joe D'Alessandris to work up those offensive line prospects, and Chuck Smith, who is the guru of pass rush, is also still in the building. So they have the coaches to still develop those guys, and so I do think you have to kind of believe in the Ravens' ability to coach those guys up, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it's been such a good use of someone else's money, of Steve Bisciotti's money in this case, not my money, because the cap money is mine. You spend, I'm a stakeholder in that cap money by virtue of being a season ticket holder. Everybody else is a stakeholder too, if you're a fan at all. And hopefully people take it seriously, as it's their money and not Steve Bisciotti's money, and not take a 1 year look at that money. But that money spent on coaches, that's just, it's pure gold. That's really worked out for the Ravens. And the fact they've lost so many coaches is should be telling you it's really working. All right. So you had, look at it, number seven, and we're on, I think we're down to your number nine guy, right?
Nine guy. Yes, we are. Okay. So my number nine guy, and just bear with me a second because I had to scroll down to look at, is Jalen Polk, who I'm a lot higher on, I think, than possibly some other guys in this draft. I went the wrong way on my scroll, so I've now found him. The big thing I love with Polk is his ability to process coverage. I think he's one of the best receivers in this draft at getting open against zone coverage, which would be a very handy trait for a receiver with the Ravens. I think Washington's offense faced a very high proportion of zone coverage last year, really weirdly high percentage of zone coverage, and he excelled against it. I think he's a master of attacking leverage, specifically when he's facing bail coverage, which he's faced a lot because he faced a lot of zone. He's exceptional at getting into those blind spots at sort of the field awareness to be able to manipulate those receivers and be able to get into the soft spots in the zone. He also ran a lot of option routes, and so you can see him making really great adjustments to what he's seeing in terms of coverage. So he's really, really good in that regard. When you did see him get pressed, he did have the technique to be able to clear press. I liked some of the stuff he did against the jam. He's got good footwork. I think he's developed really good technique against some of those with his feet, so that was good to see. I think, as I mentioned, the zone coverage is the big thing. He also does get open against man coverage. You can't be as secure in your evaluation of that because he didn't face it as much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you do see him running good technical routes. I'm not sure he's necessarily, he isn't a guy who will separate with his athletic ability. He's plenty quick enough to be an effective receiver in the NFL, but he's not necessarily a guy you're going to see sort of separate with sheer speed and explosion. His routes are precise and they're good, but they're not sudden or explosive. He, you know, is a guy who I think is outstanding with his hands. You know, there's very little I can do to sort of criticize his hands. He's exceptional at catching the ball outside his frame. He's always attacking targets correctly. He has really good ball tracking. I really, really like his hands. One potential for improvement here is maybe just the sort of body control to kind of protect the ball against receivers who are close in phase, because he is going to get that sometimes when he's facing man coverage. So he needs to improve that a little bit. And he's not a prolific yak guy. He's not going to be a guy who's going to get you a ton of yak. He's able to get a little bit with change of direction, and he's a tough guy, so he can hold off some hits sometimes. But he's not necessarily going to be the guy that wins a lot in a lot of yak. He's a tough, gritty guy. He blocks, just really blocks his tail off.
Plus for the Ravens,
exactly. And so I do think he's a potential for the Ravens. Like I'm less certain on his role in the NFL, but I think some of the things.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He does just do make me think that would be a nice fit for the Ravens. It's particularly in the way he separates against zone coverage, because the Ravens, I do think, need separators. That's what they look for. And I think that's what they need on the type of offense they run and the type of quarterback Lamar is. So him doing that in zone coverage is great. The one thing I would say, we can all go home crying if the Chiefs pick him, because I think that would be the ultimate landing spot for him in terms of the option routes he could run. He's such an intelligent guy that I think he'd work incredibly well with Mahomes. So let's hope the Chiefs don't pick him. But I think I really like him as a player. Not necessarily a very high potential guy in the same way as McConkie. He's just one step above McConkie in terms of his potential or my grading. But I'm a big Poke fan.
Okay. And you have him as most of his potential currently realized, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And that's where I am too. I think there's a lot of polish there. I want to talk about a few things. The separation is one of the big things that really struck me about Polk, because his situation in Washington is so extreme in terms of both the coverage, but also the fact that he's dealing with a great quarterback and two other great receivers there who are very high in on anybody's list. And to have a guy like Polk, I would expect him to do very well on a per target basis in most of the key categories. And he's not bad. He's 10.7 yards per target. Could have been higher than that. 2.29 yards per route run. That's quite good, because he's one of the pigs at the nipple, the piglets at the nipples on this thing. And so I saw something recently, by the way, that put the Texans yards per route run last year on the thing. And it was that you check the sum of them. It's like 10 yards per target or 10 yards per route run. I go, there's only one football, you know. So as good as Stroud is, he can't deliver the ball to everybody on every play.
There'll be an ESPN graphic at some point about the piglets on the tee, I think, you know, one of those animations that they do.
Yeah, that definitely is the most apt analogy I can come up with for that. Anyway, 5.2 yak per reception, as you said, that's really not that great. Here's the other thing about this is that in 2023 he had 24 contested catches And, you know, we talk about separation and, you know, he's playing against zone and whatnot. There should be fewer total contested catches. Now, he made 13 out of 24, which is good. And he made 25 out of 49 in his career, which is completely in line with that. My problem is it's just too many damn contested catches. And I was concerned more about the you know, the 452 speed, the fact that he was with other great receivers. And he's number 11 on my list. So I it's not even just an honorable mention, generally speaking, where I would love. He's number 11. He is the next guy off. The thing I really loved about him was one of the things that didn't really show up in his yak is he had 15 missed tackles forced. Now, you can force missed tackles in several different ways. You can be a tough guy, which the running back type wide receivers typically run through that, and they lead in missed tackles there. You can be a guy who's very elusive, or you can be a guy with great contact balance. It does not really seem to me like Polk is any of those. So there's an effort category that he's just done reasonably well in to have a modest or a moderate yak per reception, which is okay. So I thought that was a positive thing. I think he does do some good bodying out of receivers, which is one of the probably the reasons why he's had pretty good success on contested catches. Is he's more of a box out player that way. What else did I have to think? I don't like him as much for the Ravens because I think he's polished and the things he can't do now will probably stick with him. So, I mean, obviously he doesn't have that top gear at 452 that you would like for a guy who's going to be consistently threatening hitch or go. He's just not that guy. And I had a great year at Washington. I would love to, I'd be very happy if he were drafted depending on the spot. But if he were drafted before the third round by the Ravens, I think I'd be a little upset about it. I would not want them to use their pick in the second round, even if they stay in the exact same spot to get him.
No, I think it would have to. I think I would agree with that. I think it would have to be a slight trade down or potentially in the third somewhere. I think the one thing I would say in response to that is that, we're very close in how we see him. I think the other thing I would say is his explosion numbers were pretty good. Now, I didn't see a ton of that on film, but I think
you mean by his jumps and stuff at the college?
Yeah, his vertical jump, his broad jump. That was pretty good. I think it was 80s and 90th percentile. So that's pretty good. I didn't see a ton of that on film. Like, I didn't think he was explosive in the way he separated. So there might be some headroom there to develop. The other thing is his play against man coverage is a projection. He didn't face a ton of it at all. And so you are sort of projecting how good he's going to be in that way. I love the way he processes coverage. And so I start to think about the fact that his technique could rise to the level that you need at man coverage. So I'm that's why I'm probably a tad bit higher on him than you are. But I think I agree with a lot of the things you mentioned as well.
If you're saying you're a tad bit higher, I don't think we're more than about 12 to 15 picks different on where we think he would represent value. I'd love him at 75. I don't want him at 60.
There'll be too many other options. Yeah, too many other players, too many other options here.
All right. He was your number 9 guy, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'll move down to a guy that I really hope they don't draft, honestly. And that's Roman Wilson of Michigan. Michigan. 5'11", 185. Short arms at 30 3/8", 4.39, 40. 23 in June is one of the things that has me a little concerned. Another guy who is really fairly polished at this point. I think he probably is not a puppeteer or a puppet master or anything, but he's got some wiggle at the top of the round. He's using that already to get free. So it would concern me about how much better he's going to be. He's very good for Michigan, 11.8 yards per target, 2.68 yards per route run. The 4.6 yak per reception is not good. It's more of a smaller receiver, probably having a little bit of trouble after the catch. But this is incredible. 144.2 passer rating throwing to him. Career, it's 133.1. To do that, you have to have a high volume of touchdowns, rather, and a low volume of interceptions. And he's got both. I didn't write down exactly what he had in this last year. I didn't note it here, but was outstanding anyway, obviously, when McCarthy threw to him. And his play after the – I'm sorry, we already talked about that. Only two missed tackles forced the entire season. So that's a problem, particularly for a guy is a little bit of a speed guy, and that tells me he's not that much of an elusiveness guy. I honestly, in the tape I looked at, I couldn't really tell you whether or not I really believed he was an elusive guy or not. Devin Duvernay is a guy who had very similar speed. I would not call him particularly elusive, very linear in terms of what he does. Plays his own cards more than trying to figure out the leverage of the opponent. And it's a little bit odd in Wilson's case because he's different from Duvernay at the top of the stem. Duvernay just never really got to that point as a receiver where he manipulated the cornerback. Wilson did, you can see wiggle, and yet after the catch, that same ability doesn't really seem to be there in the same way. The other problem is that Wilson, I think he projects to an NFL slot. I think it'd be hard to justify a second round pick to get him. I know a lot of people have him significantly higher on their boards. If they got him at the end of the second round, I'm not completely bothered by the pick, but I'd rather probably have a different body type than him. So anyway, he's my guy, and I know that's not a great ringing endorsement for the guy's number 9 on my list.
Yeah, so he's much further down my list. So I wouldn't be happy with the second round pick on Roman Wilson, I don't think. So the thing for me was I'm trying to protect myself from making too big a projection on a guy. And I think with him, there were too many technical flaws in his ability to separate and the way he's running particular breaks that allowed me to sort of project too much based on the athleticism. I think the problem with the wiggle that you're mentioning and that you maybe see a little bit with his breaks is that for me, he wasn't attacking a lot of routes full speed. And so it was easy for him to wiggle because he's not going full speed. So there were a number of things, especially on speed cuts, where he's just really slow playing. And it's not a case of him varying his pacing. It's literally he's not attacking it full speed and giving himself the space to be able to make the transition. So I thought there were a number of different areas on the different types of breaks that I'm looking for where I saw real technical deficiencies that he's going to have to fix at the next level. Now, the great thing about that is he's got a higher potential score because it is something you can fix. It's not a speed deficiency. But I think it is something that I'd be a little bit concerned about. The other thing is the technical elements just appear all over his game. His release package, you know, there are times when you see him release well because he's able to use that speed, but then he's so inconsistent because he doesn't have the technique that you want to see in terms of at the release point. So he's quite inconsistent with the way he uses that speed at the release point. He does have pretty good hands for me, but I saw the same thing as you in terms of Yak. He can use his speed and can win with that speed at times, and a little bit with angles, but there's little else to his game in terms of the Yak. And you're going to be able to, defenders at the NFL level are going to be able to really sit on that type of a Yak getter. And that's the big thing for me. The thing with his technique that is really troubling, not really troubling, but the thing that is going to need where he's going to have to make the biggest adjustment is that in college it was less pronounced because he's facing defenders who are not as high processors of the game. At the NFL level, he's going to face guys who process the game at a really high level. And those guys are going to be able to see, you know, they're going to be able to sit on those type of routes where he's not technically proficient, where he's slow playing those routes, where his stem isn't consistent. It's going to allow those defenders to be able to really sit on those routes and be able to break up passes. So I think he's got a long way to go. I think there is some potential there. I don't think it sounds like I'm really talking on the guy. I think there is some potential there, but he's got a long way to go, I think, in terms of the technical elements of playing the receiver. And in some cases, that's fair, I suppose, because, you know, he played in a very run-dominant offense and he didn't get all of the chance to be able to do that. But as you mentioned, he's also a slightly older guy too.
All right, great. I appreciate that. And hopefully I feel like I ought to move him down at this point after hearing some of your thoughts, honestly, on that. But I'd remain happy if the Ravens don't take him with their end of the second round pick. All right, let's hear your number 8 guy. Did we already tread on him earlier?
We didn't do our number 8 guy yet because my number 8 guy is Troy Franklin out of Oregon, who is an impressive downfield threat. I think the first thing I noticed about him that I it's not really worth mentioning, but you always, you're taught in Scouting Academy to look at stance first, and his stance is very odd. It's kind of oddly upright, which it doesn't feel like the most optimum way to get off the line. But anyway, his weight distribution is not consistent at all. And I think sometimes there are long periods of games where I think his weight distribution tips off run versus pass, because he's further on his front foot when it's a pass. So it's a little interesting little nugget detail that I picked up on that I could be entirely wrong on, but it did seem that he was, yeah, a little bit of a problem in that perspective.
Let's just stop you for a second. Have you ever gone onto YouTube and looked at some football from about 1970 and seen the wide receivers in a 3-point stance?
No.
So it's actually really funny to watch after you've watched football in this era, but very much like a track star, going from a standing start, as opposed to going out of the blocks.
That would be cool. I'm definitely doing that after we get off recording. So I think that one of the things that is a bit of a concern with me with him is his play strength and releasing from a jam. That's not particularly consistent at Oregon. He's got a nice package in terms of looking at releasing from a press without a jam. It's, his footwork is good. He's got a nice variety in the way that he releases. But I think, the jam element is a concern for me. I think he reads coverage really well. He processes at a high level. He has a really consistent stem, which makes it really difficult for even savvy defensive backs to predict what he's going to do. His best attribute at the break point is how sudden and crisp his breaks are, and his technique and his athleticism are how he separates consistently. But I didn't see a bunch of explosion. Like, it was all very smooth, but wasn't necessarily explosive. And so that's one concern that I do have about him at the next level.
Because he tested well in those areas, do you think that's an area for improvement?
I think so. I think so. That's why he's a little bit higher up than the McConkey and I can't remember who my number 9 guy was now, McConkey and Poke, because I think he does have a bit of a higher ceiling there. But it worries me that it hasn't come out yet already. He's had a lot of targets over the last 2 years, and it's interesting to me that it hasn't yet come out yet with the coaching that he will have received at Oregon. He's very good on posts and corners on those on those routes that call for that type of break, which you would call a bam step or a vertical cut. He's very good on those. He does have enough speed to get open on go routes. The big thing I want to mention in terms of the thing that he has to improve on is he catches the ball really well with manual dexterity with his hands on most targets. But that one, the place you can expect drops from him is when the ball is thrown over his outside shoulder. And this is my big concern. He doesn't bring his hands together quickly enough, as I mentioned before, on balls thrown over his outside shoulder. So he's what Matt Waldman would call clap catching on balls over his outside shoulder. That to me is a concern when your very best route is posts and corners, because you're going to be asked to do that a lot. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. So that's my kind of thing on him, but there's so much there to work with that I do think if you can fix some of the small technical things like his hands, the one thing I would say is hands is not easy to fix, and he's going to have to do work outside of the Ravens facility to fix that deficiency. Because I'm not sure they're necessarily going to work too much on that inside the Ravens facility. But I do think there's just a few technical things that he needs to work on, that if he can work on those, there is a real ceiling there to him as a receiver. And so I would like the Ravens to consider him. I'm not sure he's necessarily the traditional X type guy who's going to go in and win fantastic contested catches because of the sort of slight play strength deficiency, but he does have the size and the speed to play that position. So he'd be an interesting pick, and one that I certainly would consider. I'm not sure I would use pick 30 on him, by the way, though. So I think that's a potential challenge, that he may be not quite at the intersection of value and need that we talked about previously.
I'm right there with you. I think they would have to trade down to get him, maybe as far as 40 to 45. Maybe they still have a shot at him. Rail thin, you know, at 176 pounds. It's not necessarily bad. I mean, clearly is giving him the best chance to be as fast as he can. He only turned 21 in February, so he's one of the younger receivers, not the youngest, but one of the younger receivers in the draft, which is nice. He tested well in the explosiveness components. So I was positive on that. In terms of route combinations, you mentioned about the corner and the post. He has a very good combination of hitch and vertical routes that maximize him as an over the top threat. And it's so important. You get to the top of the stem. If you have a chance to make that cornerback guess wrong there, any kind of stutter, you go, you sluggo, whatever it might be in terms of what you're doing there, you have an opportunity to gain a lot of separation from technique with that combination of routes. And what you find is most of the players in this draft get a lot of, what's the dangerous receivers get a lot of cushion at the top of the stem, and they're very good hitch runners. They have very high value. He's very good, not quite at the best, at 8.7 yards per target on his hitch routes. Verticals are a lot better than that. There is some variation that comes along with verticals because you don't have as high completion rate, so it doesn't necessarily mean hey, he should be running more of those. Relatively speaking, defense needs variation more than offense does. So you don't necessarily always want the highest expected probability when you're running routes. 12.1 yards per target was terrific. 3.32 yards per route run. He had 12.8 on ADOT, despite having a fairly significant slug of screen passes, which are a complete waste. For him, I don't remember exactly what he had up on a per target basis, but it might have been 5 yards per target in that range. 9 drops, you mentioned a little bit, 8% drop rate for his career. It is something he definitely will need to face. That's a fix. That's too high a rate. You'd like your receivers probably that are being drafted to be in the 3 to 7% range, 3 to 6% range maybe would be kind of ideal. There aren't too many guys lower than 3, but if you get them, fantastic. But there aren't many. The overall rating throwing to him this year, 147.8. Okay, that included 14 touchdowns and 1 interception. 158.3 is perfect. We're not talking college ratings. I know those go up the stratosphere, but this is converted to the pro level rating. And I'm in agreement with you. I don't see picking him with number 30. I think there'll be other good options. I think if they trade back and they get hopefully 2 picks in this draft, that he might be a reasonable guy that they'd pick up at 40 or 45. And by the way, there's going to be a whole bunch of Troy Franklin people and a whole bunch of wide receiver people. He'll never be available at 45. Well, don't worry about it. Then somebody else will be. You know, let the board come to you, damn it. You know, as soon as you've completely committed to one player being the only guy you want, you're essentially turning your whole draft into a need-based draft. And that's not what we want to do. So do what the Ravens do and just evaluate a value range for the guy. And then if he doesn't drop to that, well, somebody else got to, you know, might have overpaid for him. Tough for us. What else would I say about this? Okay, there is one more thing. In terms of his hitch package and what he does, I think there are some other teams that would do better deriving value from that specifically. And in particular, if his hitches are on the boundary, meaning they're really comeback routes. You might term them differently, but they're comeback rounds on the boundary where they're threatening both. Lamar is not has not so far been a timing quarterback. Now, Lamar's evolved a lot. Maybe he could get better at that. Maybe if he had Derek Mason, he'd be like Joe Flacco and willing to fire the ball to the outside and let Mason go get the football. So far, I don't really think that's him. He rather holds the play, wants a better play than your typical comeback route as his option, and is willing to do that. One of the great things about Flacco was had the great arm to get it out there, but he also wanted to get rid of the ball quickly. And so he was happy to let Basin go get the ball. So don't know if you get full value out of Franklin there. That said, I had him higher than you did, and I had him at number 6. And I completely agree with you. And what is your value number for Franklin as a Raven in terms of the pick you'd want him at?
Yeah, I think I'm with you in terms of 40 to 45. I think that's where, you know, especially when I look at the other talents in this class, it just feels like there will be something better at 30. And the other challenge for me is when we get to my number six guy will definitely be, maybe not, maybe the NFL views in the same way as I do, but from the looks I've seen, he will definitely be available ahead of Franklin, and I would take him ahead of Franklin. So, yeah, so I think 40 to 45 is probably about right for me.
Okay. All right. We ready to move on? We're doing good. We're an hour here. I'm sure we're going to do two more players on this show, and then we'll move on, I think, to the next. So my number is a 7 guy or 8 guy we had right now.
So Franklin was my number 8 guy.
So yeah. It's my number 8 guy. Well, boy, we're not going fast on this, but this is how it always ends up
going. We can get through 7 really quickly because we've done my 7 guys.
Okay, good. Good. Adonai Mitchell of Texas, 6'1". By the way, his height was inflated all over the place. As high as 6'4", I saw, 205, but he's 6'1 and change. 31 1/4 inch arms, which is also a little short. You wouldn't guess that for the thing. So it's one of these guys that you really, I'd love to get the true story on measurables from 4'34", 40". He won't be 22 until October, so that's quite young. The jumps are terrific. They underscore explosiveness and acceleration that you can see on tape. And that's most of the good stuff. Now the other stuff that makes him a big project. 9.8 yards per target just is not particularly impressive for what he did. 1.72 yards per route run. Again, kind of meh. 3.2 yak per reception. Goes down very quickly after the catch. There's no excuse for a guy his size and his speed not to have some juke, some push through, some contact balance, some of a lot of things that would get him more than 3.2 yak per play. And that's a significant, has a significant impact on his total yards per reception. So that's not what we want. It wasn't better in past years. He's 3.0 in his career. So it's not a case of he was better. This was just a down year, nothing like that. I think his ball tracking is at kind of a mediocre level. And that is a big negative for me. And it's one of the reasons why I really hope the Ravens don't take him with their first round pick. There's plenty of places in the second round. I'd be happy getting Mitchell, but he's not the guy I want with the first round pick. 4 out of 16 catches on go and post routes. Some of that's due to the quarterback. That's fair enough. But a lot of times the quarterback will leave it out there, let the wide receiver get it. And I just didn't see really good in-time recognition on the ball in the air retracking to it. You look at outfielders and how they go to fly balls. It's a great parallel in terms of taking the most efficient track to the football. And he just is not at the top of this class in that. Variety of in-breaking routes are what he's particularly good at. Slants in particular are his bread and butter. He's a big slot in the NFL, I think. Again, not a position that I think the Ravens need. I don't think that he's a guy necessarily you just put at X. And if you do want him at X, he certainly has the size and the speed to do it. The question is, can you teach him to do all the other things a receiver needs to do? Run a bunch of different routes, track the ball properly to be a valuable X on your team. And I think then you're taking time away, and he is a project. Difficult man matchup. 13 of 30 on contested catches is not what I would want out of his size and shape again. So that was one. And I guess, you know, I've heard his name mentioned to the Ravens some at 30. He's one of the few players that I would fear the most that they would draft at 30. And I just would not be happy with it. But I want to hear your thoughts on him. I hope you got something different to say.
So I would 100% agree. Unfortunately, he's my number 11 guy. Mm-hmm. So he's just outside the top 10. He scares me too. You cannot ignore the athletic gifts. You cannot ignore the ability on vertical routes and slants, as you mentioned. I've got a couple of slightly different things to add. I think he is actually very good in the release portion of the route. Like, he does release well against different types of press. He's also got a pretty good plan against when he gets jammed too. So the things that you don't necessarily see in some other parts of his game, he will release pretty well with a pretty good plan against the jam. he could add a bit more polish on the work with his hands, but he's pretty good. The thing that I think that I'm most concerned about with him is his technique on some of the on some of those other routes that aren't slants or slants or vertical routes. So I'll just read a tiny bit from my report, if that's all right, which is when he gets to the break point on shorter routes that call for a speed cut, and that's that speed cut will be when someone's running an out route to the sideline, there's far too much rise. So you want to see on a speed cut him just consistently at the same level in terms of his shoulders. You want to see him consistently as he turns the corner, no rise at all in what he's doing. I see far too much rise as he's getting to that break point, and he doesn't make the transition very quickly. The other thing to be concerned about is on dig routes and deep outs. He's got a really good break step, which means his first step to sort of into the break is very good. But then his drive step and his line step, which are the two, the second and third step out of that, which are the thing that gets you to make the transition well, are a little bit concerning. They are they just let the defender back into the rep far too often. There's too much depth on that break. So basically, there's a number of technique issues on those. On those types of route that anybody who takes him is going to have to fix, and fix pretty quickly, for him to be like that type of X that people sort of, you know, the way I hear people talk about him, there's a lot still to work on in his game for him to be that player. And when you're starting to have so many things that he needs to work on, you start to get more and more nervous about the projection you're making of him being that sort of number one receiver. Now, he could go away, as you mentioned, he's a younger guy. He could go away and he could come in and really develop in a number of those elements. As we've mentioned before, some of these things are coachable, they are teachable, especially the technique elements in the way he separates. So I sort of do expect that there is a real chance that he could reach that ceiling, but it's a bit of a bet that you're making, I think, on Mitchell.
Where's your number on Mitchell in terms of the spot where you're okay with them taking him?
It's, to be honest, I think so you're never going to get him here, but for me, he's more towards the bottom of the second round. Okay. For me, and where I would be really comfortable, that second round pick, you know, you take a chance on that upside. I kind of get that. But anything before that, I'd be really nervous about.
Yeah. Well, for sure. I'd be okay using that second round pick on him over some of the other guys that we seem to like, you know, together, like Leggett and others. Yeah. I would be okay picking him there. I'd probably be okay higher. You know, it's funny for me to say that I'd want him at 50 when I want the number, my last guy at, no, that makes sense.
Yes, right.
I have Franklin at six. Yeah. Okay. So maybe 50 is the spot I would take him. You know, this draft, I really don't want to see the Ravens trade up, even though they have 9 picks already. I'd like that to be 10 or 11 because they have so many holes to fill, so many players they need to find. And there's only so many of them where they're going to find quality picks among the undrafted. And since I'm okay with project players who can come in those middle rounds, you know, trading in the way the one and getting a two and a three kind of thing, or two twos, you know, it's just a lot more exciting this year than it's been in other years.
Yeah, I think if you're going to trade up in this class, I would want to trade way up, because I am excited about some of the elite talents in this draft. Both at
you want to get Joe Alt?
I would love to get Joe Alt. Joe Alt is my absolute number one guy on my board, so I would love to get Joe Alt, and he's going to fall a little bit because of all the skill position and quarterbacks that are going to go. But you're going to still going to have to get into the top 10, and that's going to be prohibitively expensive. So.
Yeah, there's literally people say, why don't you do it? Well, just trade next year's number one if you have to. I mean, even the next year's number one and this year's number one is not enough to get the pick that would get you Joe Alt, because it's discounted, and it really doesn't make sense. And I know the times that it's happened recently, the teams have gone up there and even gotten to number 10, they've really regretted it. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers did that for Devin Bush, and it ended up being just a really horrible move for them. All right. Let's keep going here. So we'll go to your number seven guy was Leggett, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess we're to my number seven guy. This is the last one we'll do on this part of the show here. And that's Jermaine Burton of Alabama. who I like a lot, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on. Another deep threat from Alabama's offense is if they didn't have every single one, 14.0 yards per target. Now, just 3.3 yak per reception. He's 6'0", 196. He's got a little bit of a slighter frame and whatnot. All the other metrics are good. 2.75 yards per out run, 20.2 ADOT. They do not waste time throwing screens to this guy. The passer rating throwing to him was almost 129, so that was good. Did not have a single drop in 2023. I love that. And only four in his college career. So we're talking about this really rare to have guys under 3%. He's at 2.9% in his 4 years, two at Georgia, then two at Alabama. And I think here's my one concern about Burton is this. That Alabama did a lot of rotating receivers onto the field. And it's something they've done, you know, obviously for a few years now, but they always seem to be fresher than the defenders, particularly if any drive goes for any period of time. You know, so his snap totals in the last two seasons were 290 and 334. You could just see him coming onto the field against a panting defensive back coming back from covering a nine route and saying, "Hey, let's go," you know, kind of thing. Just how unfair that was. He's been an outside guy, so he's not a risk of moving to slot or being a slot guy. I think he's got solid wiggle at the top of the stem. Does good in terms of change your direction, in terms of getting inside separation in particular. The guy can't shut up. And he's one of the people who, you know, Ray Rice was this way, just blah, 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 after the play at the opponent. It's like, get back into the huddle already. You know, we got another play to run here. I can almost see that at least for the first time it would happen before Harbaugh would have a talk with him, that he would prevent the Ravens from getting a no huddle snap off in time. and that would be pissing people off from the way he was jawing. Anyway, very, very low missed tackle forced rate as well, which is, you know, leads to that yak thing. But he's got quite a lot to offer in terms of being a deep threat. I guess my big question, what I want to hear from you, James, is he going to be able to maintain what he did at Alabama on a higher snap volume with the potential freshness issues not being there to be a game?
Yeah, I think he will. I sneakily like Burton. He's outside my top 10, but that doesn't mean I don't like him. And I do feel when you talked about him there, and also with my when I think about the tape I did on him, this new grading system I've put in place has thrown out some funky positions on players who I felt like I liked on tape, and then they come out with a grade that's lower than some guys that I thought I didn't like on tape. And so that's probably a good thing because it's holding me to account. But Burton, I did really like on tape, and I was surprised because I've watched some of his games before. So I did a bit of summer scouting on him last year, and I didn't come out so impressed, but I've come out now pretty impressed with him, and I did like him. So I'm surprised the grade ended up with him outside the top 10. I think he's really good in the release portion of the route. I think he does have the separation ability with the way that he with his kind of change of direction and the way he moves. It does make me think of a guy that will be, you know, it does make me think of a guy who will be successful in the league. He is also a vertical threat that I like. I think the area of his game for me that I would have liked to have seen improvement is the contested catches. I think he's more consistent at the college level with contested catches than he will be at the NFL level, because I think some of his attack of his targets, he was pretty lucky. You know, the baseball equivalent would be BABIP. I think I feel like he had a pretty high BABIP this year because he just, some of the attack of targets on those contested catches were a bit concerning. I'm not sure that translates to consistency at the next level. So that's my thing with him. But I'm intrigued by him. And I think he's the kind of big Z that you were talking about earlier, because I actually think the best place for his release game is going to be where he's got a little bit more space between him and the defender and he's able to work. So I do think that's his role, I think, at the next level.
Now, this is very impressive on a lot of levels there, but how many British people understand what BABIP is? There's a lot of American people who don't know batting average ball in play, and that's really impressive. Anyway, Abby, I one of the things I kind of didn't like this season, and probably doing it myself a little bit, was the Dolphins coach McDonald, right? Talking to the British reporter who was asking a lot about scheme. And first of all, the question was not a good one because he was basically telling him information. But then McDonald responded to it in a way that I really didn't like either, because I thought it was kind of condescending about his accent. Didn't really mean that he, you know, should be. But anyway, it's one of those moments. Okay, so we're through the top, the 7 through 10 for both of us now. We're going to come back on a second part of our show. The first thing we're going to do is talk about honorable mention. Then we'll go 6 to 1. But James, I got to say, the time flies when I'm talking football with you. I just absolutely love to hear your thoughts on the draft. You obviously put a lot of work into this. Now, you are a draft guy this year as well, or because of the baby you had to...
So actually, it was the baby that scuppered me putting one out last year, but it will be out this year. Slightly less reports than the first year I did it, just because the grading system is much more labor intensive this year. So I'm not able to churn out the same number of reports. I think I got well over 100 2 years ago. This year, it'll be more like 70, 75. But that'll be coming out a couple of weeks before the draft. You can find some of the reports already on Russell Street Report, as they do post some of those for me in a section of their website. But the full guide will have a little bit more in it. It'll have the grades and it'll have some sort of blurbs about the positions, and then full one-page reports on all of the 70 to 75 guys that I end up doing. And it also includes a kind of little discussion at the bottom of their projection and how I think they fit with the Ravens. So hopefully it's a guide that really appeals to Ravens fans. I know there was a ton of downloads 2 years ago. So be grateful for any support that I get on that front.
Outstanding stuff. James, really appreciate having you on. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. If there's a draft topic you want to cover, hit me up with what that is. It can be pre-draft, it can be post-draft, but we got to go quick if you have an idea you want to talk about, particularly if it's pre-draft. DMs are always open on Twitter. Also open for the Recollections series if you just want to talk about a particular player from Ravens history that's your favorite. And in particular, if you can get your dad interested in talking about a Raven from the 1990s, that would be ideal. Some people, I'm the right age to be some adult's dad now. And I can just tell you that it's a... it's really difficult to find people who want to talk about the 1990s Ravens and some memories they have of them. And so I hope I can find some of those as we go. James, thanks again for coming on. We'll talk to you in part two in a moment.
Yep. Thank you.
I'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.